We're holding on Ayin Beis Amud Aleph, the third line. We talked about in the Mishnah, and we've been talking about in the Gemara about various dinim involved with ribbis between goyim and Jews, where of course a goy is allowed to charge a Jew ribbis and vice versa. But you do have nuances in there when there are more yidden involved or different things like that. So now let's take a different tack. A goy himself, after all, can become a yid. How does that affect the dinim of ribbis? So the Gemara says, "Tanan Rabban, Yisrael shall love a mois min anochri beribis." A Jew borrowed money from a goy, and the understanding was that he's going to, and the deal was he's going to pay ribis. V'zok von olav b'milva. And now later on we made the whole thing into one big milva. So at some point, what we did is we rolled in the amount of ribis as one big loan. In other words, to start with, let's say the yid borrowed $100 from the guy, and the deal was he was going to pay 10% interest. So when he pays back, if he doesn't pay back by a certain date, then he's going to be paying 100 in principal and 10 in interest. Now, at some point, instead, they rolled it all into one big thing, and they're writing out a shtar that says that I, Reuven, owe you, John, $110. So now, v'nisgayer, and now the guy becomes a ger. So, im kodim shenis gayer zok from olav b'milva, if this zok of olav b'milva, if this this writing of the new shtar, if this writing of the new shtar took place before he became a ger, goyves a keren but goyves a ribis, then he can collect the entire thing keren and ribis, because in effect, what we're saying is, once we made Zok for Nala B'milva, once we made a new shtar for 110, so now it's considered as though he already collected the whole thing. Well, he collected it all when he was a guy. So therefore, there's no problem now that he's a yid of him actually receiving the money. But if we only did this Zok for Nala B'milva after he became a ger, then goy vesa keren vein goy vesa ribis, then he can only collect the keren, not the ribis, because we're going to deal with in the Gemara in a minute we're going to bring the braisa, and then afterwards we're going to discuss what the halacha is. But the point is, in this case, the Ritva explains it's gzeira d'rabbanan midraraisa, there wouldn't be an issue with it. The fact is, the ribis was arranged at a time when he's not yet chayiv in the dinim of ribis, but it's midrabbanan, and therefore we don't want to allow him to collect the ribis. But if zokran olav b'milva beforehand, so now it became one big chayiv of 110, then fine, he can collect that even after he became a yid. There is a good deal of discussion among the poskim about certain details for this. So among other things, would that work as far as the ribis that accrued so far, or would it also work for the ribis that's going to accrue later on? So here, we're saying, for example, he owes him, let's say, 10% interest per year. So does that mean, for example, now let's say they wrote out a shtar that says, you know what, the expectation is this loan is going to be for 2 years. It's going to be 10% per year. So therefore, it's going to be $10 after the first year and $20 or $21, really, really considering compound interest, but whatever, after the second year. So now we write out a shtar that says he owes him 120. Now, if in the middle he becomes a ger, then would he be able to collect the whole 120 or only the 110 because only what accrued so far? So you have that question. The Beis Yosef brings that, in fact, there's Machlokas Rishonim on that point. And then you have the other way around. Now how that would be allowed then in that case, the Rosh actually, so the Ritva says it's only also Dirabbanan, and therefore the same Chachamim who said that it would be normally also can say it's Mutter in this point. On the other hand, the Rosh says even if it is actually also Daraisa, sometimes we find that the Chachamim have the ability to override even things Daraisa. Anyway. So v'chein, and the same way the other way around, nochri shalova mois miyisrael beribis. The other way around, where a goy borrowed from a yid at ribis v'zok fanala b'milva, and we wrote out one big shtar that includes the entire amount keren and ribis. Venisgayer, and the goy becomes a ger. Same idea. Im ad shalonis gayer zok for nolav milva. If the, we did the zok for nolav milva while he was still a goy, goy vesa keren, but goy vesa ribis, then the yid is allowed to collect the keren and the ribis from the former goy, because again, the zok for nolav milva makes it as if already he had collected the choiv at that point. So he collected it while the guy was a goy, and therefore that's fine. Imnishinis Gaia Zok for Nolaba Milva, but if we did this Zok for Nolaba Milva, writing a new big shtar only after he became a ger, Goibes a Keren Vena, Goibes a Ribis, then the Chachamim say that he, then the Chachamim are going to say, again, it's going to be a Xera, again, according to, again, are we saying that at this point it would be Mutter Menat Torah and also only Drabanan, or would it actually be also Menat Torah? And again, does it apply only to the interest that accrued so far, or to all of it? But anyway, he can collect the Keren, but not the Ribs. Reb Yossi says in the last case, he says no. Nachu Shalavim Mois Misra B'Ribis. If a guy borrowed money from a Yid on Ribis, and then he became a Ger. Bain kach or bain kach, Rabbi Yossi says it doesn't matter whether zok v'nolav milva or not. Either way, goy v'es a keren, but goy v'es a ribis, the yid can collect the keren and the ribis. So unlike Rabbi Yossi agrees that in the first part where the yid owes money to the goy, then it's going to depend on zok v'nolav milva, and only if he did that before he became a ger, only then is he going to be able to collect. But in the sefer, Rabbi Yossi is saying it doesn't matter, even if there was no zok v'nolav milva. Then still, so we still have the structure of it was still that you have he owes 110 for principal and 10 for ribis, and now the goy became a ger. Then still, Rabbi Yossi is saying that that either way the goy can collect the former goy now ger can collect that extra 10. Amar Rava, Amar Rav Chista, Amar Rav Huna, halacha k'Rabbi Yossi. The halacha is in fact like Rabbi Yossi, even though there was no zok for nolav milva, the ger would now be able to collect the ribis that was arranged while he was a goy. Within that also, you have actually a machlokas, the Rashba brings, you have a machlokas of earlier Rishonim. Would Rabbi Yossi allow it when there was no zok for nolav milva and not at all, or would it only be if it was there was zok for nolav milva, but only after he became a ger? Anyway, Omar Rava, my time at Rabbi Yossi, why does Rabbi Yossi say that? The Chachamim, it's easy to understand. The guy is now a Yid, therefore he can't be collecting ribis. Mela Zok for Nolaba Milva, fine, we can talk about that. It's considered as though it was already paid off. But if there was no Zok for Nolaba Milva, at least not before he became a Ger, and now he's a Ger, why should he be allowed to collect? Rabbi Yossi says, Shalo Yomer B'Shvil Ma'osav Nisgayu Zeh. You don't want people to say, look at that, this guy became a ger in order to not have to pay ribs. Therefore, in the Sefer, where it's the former goy, now ger, who's having to pay ribs, we're still going to require him to pay that anyway. So here we have where the Rosh says that it is actually something that would normally be also daraisa, and he is required to pay even the ribis that accrues after he becomes a ger. In this case, because of this gzera, the chachamim. In this case, because of this concern, the chachamim are able to do lako dover minatoda. The chachamim are able to overrule something minatoda. Basically, on the grounds of hefker based in hefker. On the other hand, the Ritva says that it's not Daraisa anymore, because Daraisa would only be if it was arranged when both of them were Jews, and here it wasn't. It was arranged while he was a goy, so it's only really a matter of Maris Ayin. Therefore, the Chacham can overrule that and allow that. So in all these cases, then we have points that the Rishonim make, whether we're talking about all of the ribis or only what accrued before he became a ger, and whether there doesn't matter when the zok for nolav milva was before or after he became a ger, etc. So you have a little bit of complication there. But basically, the idea is that we're saying that zok for nolav milva, the basic consideration that we're saying is zok for nolav milva makes a difference in that you're now making it into one big of X plus X rather than outright saying that you're collecting ribis, and therefore that makes a certain difference as far as the halakha. Okay. Another din as far as shtaris involving ribis, tanan rabbanan, shtar shekosa by ribis, when you have a shtar between Jews, that is, that says ribis in it, so you have somebody was over on the issue of ribis, or both of them were over really, And they wrote out a shtar that says that Reuven borrowed from Shimon at X amount of ribis. So we penalize the malva. The enegova loyos a keren veloyos a ribis. Divir Rameir. Rameir is saying then that we penalize the malva and he loses the debt completely. Can't collect the keren, and he can't collect the keren or the ribis. The Chum say he will be allowed to collect the keren, he just won't be allowed to collect the ribs. So now Tosfos within that brings a long discussion over here. When we say that Rameyer is saying he can't collect, does that mean he can't collect anything at all? What about from Nechosim B'nei Chorin? What about if the Loivis still has property right now? Can he collect from that? So first Tosfos brings from the Rivam that he would be able to. He would at least be able to collect from B'nei Chorin based on the shtar. The question is, aren't the Edim themselves Rishoyim for signing on such a shtar? So Tosfos mentions over here, because the Edim are not gaining anything from it, therefore we don't consider them Edei Chomos, Edim who are Rishoyim, that they should be possible Edus. Tosfos then further on, and the Tosfos gives various other answers. We could, in fact, be talking not Ribis D'Araisa, rather we could be talking about Ribis D'Rabbanan over here in the first place, or we could be talking about that people don't know that Edim who sign on such a shtar are committing an Isser. And then you have a general rule, we learned it all the way back at the beginning of the Masechta, that when people don't know that something is Osir, then it doesn't make them possible Edus for doing it. But in any case, Tosfos has a lot of discussion about this. So in fact, does it mean that he could after all collect, even according to the mayor, just only from Nechosim B'nei Chorin? Or would it mean, Tosfos prefers to say that no, it means your mayor is saying you can't collect at all. And even Tosfos says, even for example, even if there were other Edim, even if the Loiva himself agrees that he admits that he owes this money or whatever, the mayor would still say that the same rule applies and he can't collect it all. And the Chum, meanwhile, are saying that the Malva can collect the Keren, just not the Ribis. Obviously, he can't collect the Ribis, but the Chum would say he can still collect the Keren. So the Gemara says, what's the underlying machlokas? Rameir Sava Kansin and Hatera Mishum Isura. Rameir says it's true, of course, the loan itself is perfectly mutter. Nevertheless, we're going to penalize him. We're going to penalize him and take away the heter because he was over on something of Isur. Rabbanan Sabri Lo Kansin and Hatera Mishum Isura. Whereas the Chum say we don't penalize like that, and therefore we won't allow him to collect the ribis, of course, but we will allow him to collect the karen. Tosfos, by the way, points out over here that now we have a concept that Gemara mentions in some places called halacha k'rav meir b'gzeiroisa. When the mayor says we can't do such and such because of gzeira, that it, you might confuse it with such and such. Generally, the halacha is like the mayor in that, even against the chachamim. But here it's not a gzeira; here it's a knas, and therefore that's different. In fact, Tosfos says the halacha would be like the chachamim. Now let's talk about another a similar case, also involving shtaris that are also involving shtaris where there's something wrong with the shtar. So here we're talking about a shtar that had ribis in it, and we can see very obviously in the shtar that there's something wrong because you have ribis written in it, and we're talking about whether you can collect with it. So now in a similar vein, we have a shtar where there's something else wrong with it in terms of the date. Tnan Hossam, we learned earlier. We learned this earlier in the Masechta. Originally it's a Mishnah in Masechta Shavias. It comes up in a number of places in Shas. Shtori Chayv Hamukdomin Psulin, predated Shtori Chayv are possible, or Vamur Chorin Ksherin, and post dated ones are kosher. So here you have, for example, so Reuven borrows money from Shimon in Ir, and they write the shtar that he borrowed from him in Nissen. Then we're saying the shtar is possible, because the problem is that when the shtar, of course, creates a shibud, now you're going to have, it's going to look like he borrowed from him already in Nissen. That would mean any property that Reuven sells later on, that Reuven sells later in Nissen or in the beginning of Ir, is going to be, we're going to think that he can take it away from the buyers, as because it's in the Chosim B'Shabadim. Meanwhile, he didn't borrow until some date and year, and that property is secure because the other people bought it before the loan was ever taken out. Therefore, we say the shtar is posel because he's trying to get himself something extra. He's trying to get himself a shibur from an earlier period of time. As opposed to mo'chorin, if instead he wrote the shtar that he borrowed in Sivan, then it's kosher because then fine, he's not doing anything bad as far as mishabodim. On the contrary, he's weakening his own position because now when he had such a shtar written, because now if Reuven sells any property later on in year, he's not going to be able to collect from it on the basis of the shtar since the shtar says Sivan. Rashi over here, and in other places, says that it means he can't collect from mishabodim. He can never collect from Meshabodim, he can only collect from Bnei Chorin. So he would be able to, so Rashi says, when we say Shtari Chayv HaMakdomim Psulin, doesn't mean completely possible, just means he can't collect from Nechosim Meshabodim at all, even from Nechosim Meshabodim after the actual date. So in other words, in the first scenario, the loan was taken out in Iyar, and he wrote the Shtar in Nissan. Not only, obviously, he can't collect from property that was sold in Nissan, he wouldn't even be able to collect from property that was sold in Iyar or Sivan or Tammuz or whatever because of that. But he would be able to collect from Nechos Bnei Chorin. That's according to Rashi. Tosfos over here, part of Tosfos' lengthy discussion over here, which they also bring up in Masechta Rosh Hashanah at the beginning when it talks about over there that you have Rosh Hashanah and Rosh Chodesh Nissan is Rosh Hashanah L'Malachim V'lo Regalim. And for Jewish kings, it's at the beginning of their year. And later on, it says that Rosh Chodesh Tishrei, Rosh Hashanah, is the Rosh Hashanah for Goyish kings. And all of that is relevant as far as Shtori Chayv, Hamukdomim, Psulin, Ramu, Chorin, Kshayrin, the same Mishnah that we're saying over here. So Tosfos brings over there that it means that it's actually the Shtar is completely possible and he can't even collect from Nechosim Bnei Chorin. Anyway, so that's the Mishnah. Well, the question is, Mukdomin, am I psulin? Well, the question is, why would, when the Shtar is predated? Now, again, you have the question Tosfos points out. So, again, don't you have the problem that the Edim themselves, anyway, the Shtar ought to be possible because the Edim are signing on a false Shtar. So there's a few possibilities. There can be, for example, that the Edim themselves, in fact, Tosfos explains one possibility is that the Edim later on come and say that we were onus, we were forced to sign the shtar, and even though it was predated. Or there could be a mistake in the dates. At the beginning of a Sechta Rosh Hashanah, you have just that. Why do you need a Rosh Chodesh as far as the years of kings? Why do you need a Rosh Hashanah as far as the years of kings? Just say each time, whatever day the king ascended the throne is the day from then on, a year later, you're going to say he begins his second year and so forth. So Rashi and Tosfos discuss over there in Rosh Hashanah, and Tosfos is discussing over here that if you do that, then you're going to have confusion as far as what year you're in. You may forget after many years when exactly the fellow became king, and therefore when the year rolls over, and then you're going to end up pre or post dating shtaris based on that. So therefore the Chum wanted to make a uniform date for every king. So you could have, in other words, the shtar is dated. So you could have, for example, the shtar, let's say, for example, not Nissan and Iyar. Let's say, for example, the shtar is dated Iyar of the third year of the king. And in fact, really, it was Iyar of the second year because they got mixed up and they forgot when the guy became king or they mixed up the year or whatever. Anyway, the point is, so you could have that. But again, Tosfos says you could also have that the Edom are saying that they were anusim, that they were forced to sign the shtar. And in that case, then it doesn't. So the shtar itself, we can talk about being posel, but nevertheless, the Edom are not posel as a result of it. Anyway, so the question is, the Gemara says, am I psulin? Well, why are we saying the shtar is posel, according to Rashi, to collect from the Shabodim at all, even after the date when the loan actually took place, and according to Tosfos, to collect completely? Nihid like Govum is man rishin. Granted, he can't collect from the earlier date because how could you say that he could collect from Nissan when the loan wasn't taken out until Iyar? Nigvum is man sheni, but at least let him be able to collect from Nechosim Shabodim from property that the loiva sold after the actual time of the loan. So at least the malva should be able to collect from Nechosim Shabodim from Iyar and onward. Why are we saying not? So Omer Shimon Lokish Machlokas Shnuya Vremeir. So Rish Lakish says, in fact, this Mishnah that we just quoted is not according to everybody. It's in fact the subject of a machlokas. The same way as in the previous point, we said
when you have a shtar with ribis that Rav Meir is penalizing and saying once you can't collect the ribis, then you can't collect the keren either. We said kansin and hetera mishumi sura. We penalize him and make him lose the heter as well. Well, Rav Meir is going to say the same thing. Since you can't collect from nechosim b'shabodim from earlier because you predated the shtar, then Rav Meir is going to penalize you and say you can't collect from nechosim b'shabodim at all, or to collect with the shtar at all, according to Tosfos. So, but in fact, Rish Lakish says the Chachamim would disagree with that point and say that you could collect with the shtar, at least from the date that from the date that the loan was actually taken out. So that's the connection of this with the previous piece, is that that Rish Lakish is saying that this Mishnah is not according to everybody, only according to Reb Meir, who says that when you have a shtar with ribis, you can't collect with it. Reb Meir would also be saying that when you have a predated shtar, you can't collect with it. Reb Meir says no. The Mishnah that talks about a predated shtar would work even according to the Chachamim. Gzera shami yigbim is man rishin, because you make a gzera, because otherwise he might actually try to collect from the earlier date. It's one thing when you have a shtar that has ribis in it; it's very blatantly obvious you have ribis in it, and therefore the Chachamim are not concerned that if you collect the keren, you're going to be able to collect the ribis as well, because it'll be pretty obvious what's what. As opposed to over here, you have only one date in the shtar, and it looks like the shtar was written in Nissan, and even though the loan was taken out in Iyar, therefore even the Chachamim are going to agree you can't collect with the shtar at all. You can't collect from the Chosim B'Shabodim at all with the shtar according to Rashi, or you can't collect with it at all, even from the Chosim B'Nechor and according to Tosfos. Whatever the point being, in other words, that because there's more of a concern that you might that you might mistakenly or deliberately, as the case may be, collect from something earlier, since you only have one date in the shtar and there's no real way to tell when it was written without bringing in Aiden. Okay. So now the Gemara tells a story also involving a shtar that shouldn't have been written, and then what the consequences of it are, and also we're going to get back into this matter of when the shtar was written and when it should have been written. So the Gemara tells how who gavred the mashkan le pardes of a chavre. There was a person who had made a mashkan of his orchard or vineyard. Actually, it actually translates pardes as kerem, which means a vineyard, to somebody else. So we talked about earlier in the perek about the concept of mashkanta. You have that you borrow money from somebody and you use your vineyard or whatever as collateral. And we had various kinds of mashkantas, some of which we said some of them were ribis, some of them were ribis daraisa or darabanan, and some of them were mutter. In particular, we had the kind called mashkanta de sura, where we said you have a fixed term of the loan, and once the loan is over, then you get back your vineyard, whether during that time the malva was never able to get any payers from it at all, or whether he's able to get a huge number of payers. Either way, after X number of years, the loan is paid off. And then we had different arrangements over there where you're deducting a fixed amount per year, but he might be collecting more than that, or different possibilities, like where you're saying that for X number of years you'll get the payers, and for X number of years after that I'll get them, or whatever. And we had that whole discussion earlier on Daf Samach Zayin, Samach Ches, all about that. So there was a case like that. A person had made a mashkan of his vineyard to somebody else. Ochla tlas shni. Now 3 years had passed, and the malva is eating the produce of the field. So now the malva comes and says, you know what? I want to buy this vineyard from you outright. He says, "Even zabnis lo niali, if you're willing to sell it to me, mutav, then good, then I'll pay you for it. V'iloy, and if not, then I have you over a barrel over you. Kavishna lo l'shtar mashkanta, I will hide the shtar that had the mashkanta in it. V'amina l'kuchi b'yodi, and I will claim that I actually bought it." And in other words, I have shnei chazaka. I've already been in possession of this land for 3 years, and therefore, as we're going to learn in Bava Basra, I'm not obligated to keep my shtar anymore after 3 years. As long as we have, it's called chazaka sheyesh imataina. So I have a chazaka. I have 3 years, and I have sheyesh imataina because I can claim that I bought it from you. And therefore, you may as well sell it to me. Otherwise, you're going to lose it altogether. So the loiver doesn't want that to happen. How is he going to prevent that from happening? Come acne livnoi cotton. So the loiver goes and is machna the and is machna the vineyard to his young son. He did that in front of Aiden. So now he can't sell it anymore. Now later on, when he goes and sells it to this guy, then later on he'll be able to say, wait, it wasn't a valid sale because it wasn't mine at the time. It belonged already to my son by the time I sold it to him. The Chidushim HaMiuchasim L'Ritva point out that now you could have had a different alternative. He could have done what's called Mesiras Moida. He could have announced in front of Edim that, you know what, I'm only selling this field under duress because this guy has me over a barrel, but eventually I plan to go and clarify the matter and baste it and get it back. The reason he didn't do that is because at the time of a sale, the other guy can tell you to be Mevatel Moida. He can tell you, you know what, I want to buy this thing from you. In case you made any Moidas before, I want you to be Mevatel them before we go ahead with the sale. And then he'd be Mevatel the Moida, and he's back to square one. We have a similar kind of thing when it comes to a get. We learned in Masechta Gittin, you could have a Moida about a get. You could have a husband before he gives a get, announces in front of Edim that I'm only doing this because I'm being forced to, and later on he'd be able to claim that the get is invalid. Therefore, before he gives a get, based and we'll tell him to be Mevatel any Moidas that he made on the subject. Anyway. So. But on the other hand, if you have a sale, it's a sale. You can't be mevatel it. So therefore, that's what the guy was going to do. Is going to sell the is going to sell the place, the vineyard to his son. And therefore, now when he sells it to this malva, then it won't be a valid sale because it already belongs to his son. And therefore now he'll be able to get it back. So the Gemara says, Zvini vade lehavi zvini. Now there's no question the sale is not a valid sale because meaning now it's true. When he sells later on, when he sells it to the malva, it's true. The sale won't be able to take effect because he already sold it to his son. Zuzi, but what about the money that he received? So here you have the loiver Reuven had given the place as a mashkanta to Shimon, the malva. Now Shimon is blackmailing him and telling me you better sell me the place. So Reuven then again was saying went and sold it to his son Chanoich. Now he sells it to Shimon. Obviously the sale to Shimon is not valid because later on Reuven's going to come to Bastin and say, you know what, I have proof over here and have Edim that I previously sold it to my son Chanoich. The question is, Zuzi, what about the fact Shimon paid him? What about the fact that Shimon paid him money for the place? Do we say k'milva b'shtar dramu? Do we consider it like a milva b'shtar because there was a shtar mechira over here? He did write out to Shimon a shtar. I'm selling you the field. And actually, by the way, as far as his son, not that he sold it to his son. I said it wrongly. Rashi says he gave it to his son as a maton. So now, later on, when Shimon takes out his shtar mechira, then Reuven will take out the shtar matona and say that, in fact. So now the question is, Shimon. So Shimon is going to point out, look, okay, well then, what's going on over here? You sold me a field, and I even paid for achrayus that in case the vineyard later on gets taken away from me because of some other debt of yours, then you're going to reimburse me. So you received my money, and I paid for achrayus and everything. So where's my money? So is that considered k'milva b'shtar dramu? Do we consider that like a milva b'shtar? The goyvim and chosim shabadim, in which case Shimon will have the ability to collect that money from the chosim shabadim. Maybe it's only considered like a milva al peh, and therefore the ain't a goyvim and chosim shabadim, and he can only collect from the chosim shabadim. So is it, in other words, that we say that there was kind of a valid sale over here. So the actual sale may not be valid, but nevertheless, you at least have a shtar that says there was a sale, and therefore that's enough to collect from Nechosim Shabodim for the Achrayus, or maybe not. Maybe it's not considered a shtar at all, and it can't collect from Nechosim Shabodim. So Omer Abaya, the Lav Hainu, did Rav Asi. So Rav Abaya says, doesn't this amount to the same case as what Rav Asi is saying? The Omer Abasi, when you have that a loiver agrees that he wrote a certain shtar, then you don't need to be mekayim it. We talked about this earlier in the Masechta. Normally, a shtar, you have to be mekayim to have the edim, to have some way of certifying the edim's signatures, whether the edim themselves come to Beis Din to testify that these are our signatures, whether other people who recognize their signatures, Beis Din compares it with other signatures they have on file, etc. You have altogether five different ways that you can be mekayim a shtar. But so ordinarily, you need to do that, because ordinarily, you bring out a shtar choyv, you owe me money, the other guy could say the shtar is forged. But if he admits, says Rav Asin, if he admits that he wrote the shtar, then you don't need to be mekayim it, because now we know that's genuine. The government of Nechosim Meshabadim, and therefore the Malva would be able to collect with such a shtar even from Nechosim Meshabadim. So we see, in other words, that you're talking about a shtar that otherwise shouldn't exist. Nevertheless, the Loiva admits that he wrote it, and therefore it's valid. Well, therefore, so Abaya is saying the same kind of thing over here. It's true that Reuven had previously given the field to his son Chanoch to prevent Shimon from being able to keep the field permanently. Nevertheless, Reuven does agree that he wrote the shtar. At least it should be effective insofar as that now, when the vineyard is being taken away from Shimon, that Reuven should have to reimburse him for the achrayus. So Tosfos actually takes out the words in the Gemara over here, "Ein sorich l'kayim," that Rav Ashi said, that Rav Asi is saying that when you agree that you wrote a shtar, goyvim nechosim b'shabodim. It's not a question of whether you have to be mekayim the shtar or not. The point is that once the loiva agrees that he wrote the shtar, then you can collect from nechosim b'shabodim with it. So therefore, in a similar vein, even though the shtar becomes a shtar only because the loiva is moida that it was written, and after all, the loiva himself could claim that I paid it. Nevertheless, when he says I didn't pay it, then he can collect from Nechosim Meshabadim. But so the same way over here, then when Reuven admits that we ask him in Beis Din, look, did you write the shtar for Shimon? And he says, yes, I did, but I'd previously given the vineyard to my son Chanoch. Nevertheless, we say that the shtar is still a shtar insofar as he would have to pay for the achrayus for the fact that Shimon had paid him for the vineyard and now it's being taken away from him. Now, there are details over here that Rishonim point out that you have to be careful because you have to avoid the issue of Knunya. You could have an issue where you're going to take away Nechosim or Shabbadim from other people from before the Haidah, and you're going to be playing a trick on them. In any case, the point is that Abaya is saying that the same way over here, then, yes, he should be able to collect on his Achrayus. Omale Rava, mi domi. But Rava says, how are you comparing this with that case? Chosim nitam li kosev. In the case where we're talking about, where the loiva admits that the shtar was written and that he borrowed the money, then the shtar was validly written. It wasn't completely kosher a shtar. Here, the shtar should have never been written in the first place, because by the time the sale takes place, the land doesn't belong to Reuven anymore. It belongs to his son Chanoch, because he gave it to him as a matana. So there's no business writing a shtar in the first place. He's only writing that because Shimon is blackmailing him into it. So in that case, the shtar is completely invalid in the first place. How can we say that Shimon should be able to collect with anything based on that shtar, says Rava. So Yosef Merema v'kamal haShmaita. So later on, Merema was sitting and saying over the statement of Rava. So Ravina asks, well then let's go back to what we talked about on Amr Aleph, about the case of a shtar that was predated, where we said again that according to Rish Lakish, we said only Rav Meir would say the shtar is possible and the Chachamim would say that it's fine, but according to Rav Yechanan, we said both the Chachamim and Rav Meir would say that the shtar is no good to collect from the Chosim Shabbadim according to Rashi, or to collect at all according to Tosfos. Now let's look back at that. Elahad Amr Rabbi Yechanan, Zereshim Yigba, Mizman Rishon. What did Rabbi Yechanan say? Why you can't collect with the shtar that's predated? Because you might collect from the earlier date, and that's wrong because you can't, because the loan wasn't taken out yet. Well, based on what Rava is saying, you should say the same kind of thing. Name a loy nitim li kosev. You should argue according to Rava's way of looking at it. The shtar should never have been written because how could the shtar be written with a date on it earlier than the loan was really taken out? It's a false shtar. According to Rava's logic, a false shtar like that should be completely invalid, and you can't collect with it at all. And here Rabbi Yochanan is saying that it's only in principle the shtar ought to be kosher. But gzeira shemi yigbim is man rishin. We're concerned that he might end up collecting from the earlier date, implying that the shtar itself is kosher, whereas according to Rava's way of looking at it, the shtar is the shtar itself is intrinsically possible. Omale, so Maremer answers back, Hochi hashta, how are you comparing the two cases? Hossam, in the case of the predated shtar, sure, it shouldn't have been written from the earlier date. It's true, the shtar shouldn't have been written with a date of Nissan on it when the loan was taken out here. But at least it was meant to be written from the later date. There is a halva over here, and there is a valid reason to write a shtar. The halva was taken out at a later point. Whereas over here, in the case with the vineyard, the shtar had no business being written at all, because Reuven, how could Reuven write a shtar where he's selling a vineyard to Shimon, which he himself doesn't own at that point because he gave it as a present to his son? So therefore, yes, Rava can well say in that case the shtar is completely possible intrinsically, whereas in the case of a shtar chayv hamukdam, Rabbi Yochanan can be saying the shtar is not really intrinsically possible, but gzeira shemi yigbim is man rishon, the chum are going to be concerned that he might try to collect from the earlier date. All right, the Gemara says, how about another case? Elahod the Tanya. Here's another case. We learned in a Braisa. Now, we learned in Masech the Gittin that there are certain things where the Chachamim made a Takana, Mipnei Tikkun HaOlam, in order for society and the world to function properly. And one of them was there are certain kinds of things from which you can't collect from Nechosim Meshabadim. For example, we said over there, you can't collect from Nechosim Meshabadim. We said, for example, from Mozen Isha V'Abonis. So where for example the Yisoyimim have to support their mother or stepmother or whatever after their father passes away, or they have to support their sisters until they get married or whatever. These are open ended commitments. You can't collect from the Chosu Shabbatim. There's something else, but yeah, the point is these are open ended commitments, so you can't collect from the Chosu Shabbatim for them, because then people are going to be afraid to buy property because they're going to think they might be on the hook for it. So we have several things like that, and one of the ones that you can't collect from Nechos Mishabodim, L'shvach Kaukois, one of them was for improvements on the land, and the Braisa explains, Ketzad, what does that mean? Hareshi Gozol Sodom Echaveroi, a person stole a field, where we learned this earlier in this Masechta as well, a person, Reuven, stole a field from Shimon, U'mochra La'achar, Reuven, the Gazlan, went and sold that field to Levi, V'hishbicha, and Levi improved the property, V'harei Yotzim Tachas Yodei, and now eventually Shimon goes to Beis Din and gets his field back from Levi. Kshuhu Goyve. So now when Levi is collecting, the fact is Levi had bought the field, he paid Reuven good money for this field, and he had put in money for improvements. So when he's collecting from Reuven, Goyve as a Keren Menachosim Meshabadim, the Keren, the actual amount he paid, he collects from Nechosim Meshabadim, because that's a regular debt that Reuven owes him, and it's a closed-ended thing. We know how much it's sold for, so therefore there's no concern with that. But as far as the improvements, the fact that now the field is worth more, that he can collect only from Nechosim B'nei Chorin, but that's what we mean, L'shvach Kaukois, if he were to be able to collect that from Nechosim B'Shabadim, then everybody would be afraid to buy property. So now you're talking about over here, to begin with, Reuven sold a field that wasn't his, because he stole it. Nema, so here also, Nema loinitin likosiv. Based on Rava's logic, we should say that the shtar never should have been written in the first place, and therefore the whole shtar should be bottled, the whole achrayus should be bottled in it. So what do you mean, goiva keren menachosim ishabadim? Reuven should tell him, you know what, in effect, there's no shtar over here. You bought a field without a shtar and without achrayus, tough luck. Instead, we're saying that Reuven, the Ganev, is obligated to pay him back the Keren, implying because there is a shtar over here, because Levi is holding a shtar. But by Rava's logic, if the shtar never should have been written, then it's considered as though it doesn't exist. Then why over here are we considering it? And the Gemara again answers, Hochi Hashta, how are you comparing the two things? Hossam, when it comes to Reuven stealing the field and selling it to Levi, now we learned, When we discussed this point in the first parak, we said that there is after all a reason why ultimately the Gazlan might want to try to make things right after all. He We had a case over there where the Gazlan then goes and buys the field from the one he stole it from originally. So Reuven had stolen this field from Shimon, but we had a case where later on, after he sold it to Levi, he goes and pays off Shimon in order that Shimon should have no further claims on it. That way, in other words, so we said there's a couple of ways of looking at it. One way of looking at it is that this way, Levi in the future won't say to Reuven, hey, well, you Gazlan, you sold me a field that's not yours, and you caused me a loss. So in order to avoid that in the future, so we can say, in other words, when he paid Shimon for the field, it wasn't so much for him to be able to keep the field himself. It's not, in other words, that now he's going to say to Levi, you know what, I paid money for this field to Shimon, now give it to me. It would rather be more in order to confirm Levi's ownership of it. He would be paying off Shimon that way, where Shimon is not going to come to Levi and say, where's my field? Because Reuven already paid him for it, and now Reuven is saying to Levi, okay, listen, you paid me for it previously, so therefore that's it. Now it'll be confirmed in your hands, and Shimon won't complain about it. So we said there are two things. We said he doesn't want to be called a Gazlan, or he wants that in the future Shimon should be able to trust him. So Ilamanda Oman Nichale de la Nikaya Gazlana, whether we say that Reuven would do that in order that he shouldn't be called a Gazlan, Ilamanda Oman Nichale de Lekum Behemenose, or the way of looking at it that we said in the first parak, that he wants to be able to be considered trustworthy in the future. Either way, Mephias Lelamare, either way, he is going to appease the original owner, he is going to pay him off. And therefore be able to establish and confirm the shtar as valid. So therefore we can say, yes, to begin with, the shtar had no business being written, because at the time the shtar was written, then Reuven, whether the field was stolen and it didn't belong to Reuven, and how can he write a shtar? I'm selling you such and such a field when it's not mine, but at least later on he works to make things right.
So
we're saying that to begin with, the case is Reuven stole the field from Shimon. He sold it to Levi and wrote out a document that says, I, Reuven, am selling to you, Levi, such and such a field. At this point, we should say, like Rava said, that shtar had no business being written. But later on, we can say that there can be the scenario where Reuven then goes and pays off Shimon in order to confirm the shtar. So therefore, you can say that eventually the shtar. Therefore, eventually you can say the shtar eventually becomes valid. It may not have been valid at the time that it was written, that's what we're saying. That's what we're arguing. The Gemara had assumed that according to Rava, it would all be the same thing. As long as when the shtar was written, it was no good, then we would assume it remains that way. But now we're saying that no, the shtar shouldn't have been written in the first place. But at least after the fact, it becomes okay. As opposed to Hoka, in our case with the vineyard, with Reuven and Shimon, and Reuven's son Chanoich, La'avruchim in Ekomachavim. The whole point is that Reuven wants to prevent Shimon from actually being able to keep the vineyard. He doesn't want the sale to be chal in the first place. So therefore, shtar mekayim le. Would he be mekayim? Would he do anything to validate the shtar? Of course not. So you can say the shtar never becomes valid. So yes, Rava can say that. That there we can consider the shtar is not considered to exist at all. It's considered only a milval peh, and therefore not like Abaya had said. So again, the question was whether he'd have to refund the money because of the achrayus clause in the shtar or not. So before we were saying that he would have to refund the money. Now Rava is saying that no, since the shtar had no business being written in the first place, and it's never going to be validated because Reuven doesn't want it to be valid. The whole point is he wanted to prevent Shimon from being able to buy this this vineyard from him. He wants that after the mashkanta is over, he should be able to get it back. Therefore, we can say that no, he's not obligated to return the money. It's considered there's no shtar here in the first place. It's considered a milval peh, and therefore, fine. If he admits that he receives the money, he's going to have to return the money. But otherwise, Shimon has no claim based on this shtar that you have to refund me the money because of the achrayus, because there's no shtar here in the first place. Again, as opposed to the case where the shtar was written based on Reuven stealing a field and selling it to Levi, where later on it's very likely that Reuven is going to try to make things right after the fact and make the shtar valid afterwards. Okay. Getting back now to matters of ribis. So now we're going to talk about in the next couple of dafim, we're going to get back to a point that we started dealing with a little bit at the beginning of the parak. One of the cases where you have an issue of ribis is where you're prepaying for merchandise at the current price, and you're going to receive the merchandise only later on.
Up or down.
So the problem is, again, you have, as we learned at the beginning of the parak, Reb Nachman had said the general rule, what is also in ribis is agav netter, anytime you're giving the person something extra for the fact that he's waiting to be paid. So now you're going to have, for example, so Reuven is making an arrangement with Shimon. I'm going to pay you now for payris that you're going to deliver me later in the season. And therefore, there's the problem that Shimon, if now the payris go up in value, then Shimon is giving him something extra for the fact that he prepaid, for the fact that Reuven is waiting to get delivery of his payris. So now our Mishnah is going to deal with how we avoid that issue. So the Mishnah says, "Ein poskin al payris ad sheyetzei ashar." You cannot make such a contract and prepay for payris until there's a prevailing price. So in other words, if we have now the way it works is nowadays prices tend to be more stable over a period of time because most of us are not farmers, and then you can buy and you can get payris all year round. Back then, things were more seasonal, and many people were farmers themselves. So really what happened is like this. You would have, when it comes the harvest season, so first you would have in the little villages, they would start selling grain in small quantities. Individual farmers would do their harvest and sell their grain, and the price there would vary all over the place. That kind of thing is called shuk shel ha'yoreis. That's called the marketplace in the little villages. Later on, you would have in big cities, eventually grain starts being brought from there to the big cities, and there the price is a little more stable. There the prices may stay stable for a week or two. Eventually, that's called shar shel krakim. That's the price in the larger cities. So that's a little more stable. Then you have, eventually, people bring out also the grain that they had in storage, or large quantities of grain start being imported. People open up their storehouses to sell their grain, and people bring boats full of grain, and then you have a huge supply. Then you have pretty much all the supply you're going to be for the year, and then you have the fixed char, which is like the fixed price, which is likely to last through the rest of the season. So here we're talking about. So we're going to see in the Gemara which kind of price we're talking about. But we're saying there has to be yotzah char. It has to be that there is a prevailing price, that payris of this kind of selling for X amount a pound, and then you can make a deal and say, for example, fine, I'm going to prepay you at the rate, let's say, of $10 a pound, and then later on, if in the season they become worth 12 a pound, then that's fine. You're still going to deliver me the amount that we agreed on then. So you can't do that until yotzah char. Yotzah shah, once there's a price prevailing, poiskin, then you can make such a deal. Because even if he himself doesn't have the produce at the time, but somebody else does. In other words, so let's say, so Reuven is saying, for example, we're going to make a deal. I'm going to prepay you for 100 bushels of wheat, and I'm going to pay you now $10 a bushel because that's the current price. Later on in the season, you'll deliver me the 100 bushels. By that time, the price may have gone up to $12 a bushel. That's why he's doing it now. He wants to lock in a lower price. The thing is, what we said, the reason why it's... It may be, but it's not necessarily. It could be by the time he delivers it to him, it may go up. No, if it's going to be cheaper, he might as well just wait till later in the season and buy it. No, the point is he wants to lock in a lower price now. He wants to guard himself against that the price may go up. So now what happens is, so we're saying if lo yotza shar, then you can't do that. But if yotza shar, then we consider like this. Shimon may not have 100 bushels of grain right now to give to Reuven, but in principle, because yotza shar, he could go right out there to the market and buy 100 bushels of grain and deliver them to Reuven. Therefore, we can say it's considered as though he already did that right now. Therefore, that allows us to avoid the issue of ribs. So now it's not, in other words, that he's giving something Reuven extra. It's not that he's giving something extra to Reuven because Reuven prepaid him. It's rather Reuven has paid him for X number of bushels. And right now he has the ability to deliver that number because he has the money and he could go buy that number of bushels of grain. So the fact that he doesn't and he waits till later in the season and gives them to Reuven later, that's not a problem. So this is we said at the beginning of the parak, one of the ways that when you have these kinds of things, a ribis de rabbanan in the first place anyway, one way in which it's allowed is yotz ashar. This is the Mishnah is describing that point of yotz ashar.
Yes, so basically you wait for that.
No, so yotz ashar means that right now we have a price, we have a known price, which is going to be stable for a while, and therefore you can make deals based on that current price, even though later on it may go up.
I thought that there's abundance of stuff.
There may well be, but if there is, Reuven would be awfully foolish to pay $10 a bushel now when later on in the season you can get the same grain for $8 a bushel. No, we're talking about he wants to lock in a price to prevent in case the price goes up later. But we're saying it has to be Yotzah Shah, there has to be a prevailing price right now. I understand. Yeah, more people are bringing. Nevertheless, though, you could still have that later on prices go up for other reasons. There could be later in the season something happens that causes the prices to go up. Continues the Mishnah. So suppose, for example, that a farmer is the first one to harvest in his area. So then he himself has grain. Then you have a different rule. But then also poisik imai. Then also you can make a deal with him a la godish about his pile of, about his stack of grain. Meaning, in other words, this is the other thing we said at the beginning of the perek, that you have two things. You have yotzah shahar, and you have also called yesh loy, where he actually has the commodity available right now. So first we were talking about when Shimon doesn't have the grain right now, he's going to give it to Reuven later in the season, and meanwhile Reuven has locked in the price. Fine, as long as Yotzah Shah, then you're fine, because in principle Shimon could go and buy the grain right now and deliver it to Reuven at this price. But now you have another point as well. If Shimon himself has the whole 100 bushels of grain right now, then also he can arrange with Reuven that I'm going to sell it to you, you'll pay me now, and I'll deliver it to you later in the season. That's also fine, because yesh loy, that's the other kind of way in which it's mutter, and avoids the issue of ribis, because again, he could give it to him right now if he wants. They agreed he's going to give it to him only later in the season. That's not a problem, even though later in the season, maybe the prices go up. So you can do that. According to Rashi, we're talking about that he actually has the grain, already ready to go. Tosfos actually says that it may mean that Tosfos and the Rosh talk about it we may be talking about the grain is not completely ready yet. So you can still sell it to him at the current price, but you can't go below that price. You can't sell it to him for less than that, because then you really have agoneto involved, because then you're giving him something extra for the fact that he's prepaying. So you can arrange with him a la godish about a pile of grain. Where again, the deal is right now. So we're arranging about this grain that later on I'll give you this grain later in the season. But you're prepaying for it right now, and it's allowed because even if the grain is not completely ready yet, it's close enough to being ready that kind of thing works. So you can do that. Vala matan shol zeh, vala ovit shol anovim. Similarly, you can arrange like that about a bucket full of grapes, where you're going to be pressing the grapes to make wine. The same thing. You can arrange now. The grapes may not be completely ready yet, but I'm selling you in advance, and you're paying in advance for X number of grapes that I'm going to deliver to you later in the season. Vala matan shol zeisim, or about the vat of olives, which are going to be pressed into olive oil. Vala beitzim shol yotzer, and on the clay that's made by a potter, so you can have, in other words, you prepare clay that's ready to make kalim out of, and they haven't actually been fired into kalim yet. So again, you can make an arrangement that I'm going to sell you X number of those bowls of clay later in the season when later in the season you're going to pay for them now. So there's two possibilities. The word beats, it can be beatsim, where the word beatsa means something like clay or mud. So it would mean mud that's made by the mud or clay that's made by the potter. Or it can be beitzim, meloshen beitza, as in an egg, because they're egg shaped. They're round balls of clay, which later on are going to be shaped into kalim. So again, the deal would be, in other words, that Reuven is paying him in advance now. He's saying, Shimon is saying, I have bowls of clay that are ready to go to be made into pots and whatnot, and I'm selling them to you. We're making a deal now. You're going to pay me for them now, and I'll deliver them to you later in the season. So again, such a thing is mutter on the grounds of yesh loy, because he has it in his possession right now. Another example is they can make an arrangement like that as far as lime, once it's been placed in the kiln. So you have lime as they used it in those days for plaster and mortar between bricks and various other things. It's made by taking limestone and burning it in a large oven called a kiln. So again, you could have that they're arranging in advance. I'm going to sell you X amount of lime that you're going to use for your building purposes, and we can make that arrangement once I'm taking the limestones and putting them in the kiln, start burning them to make into lime. Then we can already make such an arrangement because, again, Yesh Loi, he has the lime already available. Later on, the Gemara is going to deal with how close to ready does each of these things have to be for this to be allowed, for Yesh Loi. We can't say, for example, well, I have the limestones already, so therefore I'm going to sell it to you in advance. That's not Yesh Loi because you don't have lime yet. I don't want to buy limestones. I want to buy ready-made lime. So the Gemara is going to deal with later on Daf Ayin Daled exactly how ready it has to be in order for us to be able to make such things. Similarly, as far as grain, for example, you can't make such a deal while the grain is still growing. It has to be very close to being ready in order for Yesh Loi to work. Another example is you would be able to make a deal like that as far as animal waste that you're going to use for fertilizer anytime during the year. Because unlike all these other things, which are seasonal, animals produce waste all year round. Rabbi Yossi says it's not so simple. Rabbi Yossi says, no, only if you actually have zevel available right now, then you can make a deal with the prepayment like that, but otherwise not. Otherwise, you have a problem that he doesn't have. The Chum Matir and the Chum say it would be mutter because even though Ein Loi, so we'll see. Now on the face of it, they're saying the same thing as the Tanakhama. The Gemara is going to end up explaining in what way the Chachamim are disagreeing with the Tanakhama. On the face of it, they're saying the same thing, that you can do Zevel all year round. Because it's being made a whole year. But we're saying, so the Tanakhama just said that Posekim Ala Zevel, Koyimos Hashana, and the Chum Matirim, it sounds like they're saying the same thing. The Gemara is going to end up explaining that there's a nuance of difference between them. Okay. Now, in all of these cases, you can arrange also that if, until now we were talking about you want to lock in a price in case prices go up, but you could also have, as you said, the prices may well go down later in the season. So you can also arrange, you know what, here, I'm prepaying you $10 a bushel, but if later on in the season the price goes down and it's $8 a bushel, then you're going to give me the larger amount. So, shara gavoya means the price at which you're going to get, at which you're going to get more. So we can say, for example, here, I'm giving you now $1,000. Right now, grain is going for $10 a bushel. And then therefore $1,000 will buy me 100 bushels. If later on in the season, the price goes down to $8 a bushel, then instead you're going to deliver to me, you're going to deliver to me 125 bushels. And sort of thing is allowed. So Rabbi Yehuda says, you don't need that. Even if he didn't make an arrangement that he's going to do that, the potential buyer could say, tenli kazeh, either give me according to the current price, which means you're going to give me 125, or tenli esmoisai, or give me back my money, because to begin with, when I paid you, I didn't do Meshicha, so therefore I wasn't actually going to the payers yet. And even Mishapara, Rabbi Yehuda says, wouldn't apply because he has the right to back out when the price has gone down. And he's saying, why should I have to buy from you at $10 a bushel when I can buy the same thing someplace else now at $8 a bushel? So we'll see in the Gemara what Rabbi Yehuda and the Chama argue about exactly. So, in fact, there was a Tosfos that's printed later on in the Perek, which actually belongs over here. If it was a halva, at the beginning of the Perek, we talked about a halva, we're saying, lend me X amount of money, and then we're saying, we're going to be mam and agav peiros. We're going to say, okay, well, as a result of that, I owe you X amount of peiros based on the current price. And there you have a problem with that of ribis. But here he's paying him money in the first place, and therefore there's no mishapara, because people know where I'm prepaying, but I also expect to be able to later on. If there's a lower price available, I want to have the option to be able to get that lower price instead. So the Gemara starts off. Amar Rav Asi, Amar Rav Yochanan, ein poskin al shar shebashuk. So Rav Yochanan is saying you cannot make You cannot make such a deal based on the price in the market. That's not considered yotza hashar when we're talking about the first kind of shuk that we're talking about, when only the little local farmers are starting to sell. Then you can't base yourself on that, because those prices fluctuate all the time. Every farmer sells it for a different price. Omale Rav Zeira Rav Asi. So Rav Zeira asked Rav Asi, Omer Rav Yechon, afilu kadrumus hazeh. Did Rav Yechon say that even when we're talking about a dumus like this? Rashi translates dumus as a large meat market. So you have like a large market where everybody's coming all over. Is Rav Yechon saying the same kind of thing, that you also can't make a deal based on the price of that? Is that considered to be a fluctuating price or not? Rabbeinu Hanano brings the Aruch brings from Rabbeinu Hanano, the word durmus comes from a Greek word that means a race, that means a race horse. So imagine like you have a big open area where horses or whatever race. So that would mean like a big open area where everybody comes for a market. Anyway, the point is, he's saying, that Rabbi Yechon is saying, does it apply only to the little small markets in the villages or even to larger ones? Rabbi Yechon is only talking about the little villages where the prices fluctuate all the time. So then you have the problem, because you're saying, so what are we saying? I'm arranging with you that you're going to sell me your harvest, which is going to happen later in the season, for $10 a bushel. And we're saying it should be allowed because you could go and buy that now, but you can't. You go to somebody else. He's not going to have it available for 10. He's going to have it available for 12 or whatever. And therefore you have an issue. Therefore you have an issue of ribis. But when it comes within the season, but now we're talking about Durmus Hazeh, when you're talking about a larger market in the bigger cities, then you have, it's a more stable price. So the Gemara says, what was Rabbi Zeira even thinking to ask the question? Well, then when Rabbi Zeira is thinking that maybe Rabbi Yechonon even meant this large marketplace, and even then it would be usher. But the Mishnah is saying you can't until there's a prevailing price. But once there's a prevailing price, then you could make such a deal. Well, what was Reb Zeira thinking? How we can understand the Mishnah in the first place, if even kadrumos hazeh wouldn't work? And the answer is because you have the third kind, masnissin b'chiti de'achlavi b'arbi, because the Mishnah, Reb Zeira thought the Mishnah could be talking about when the people open up their storehouses and when they bring the boats full of grain, when you have the entire supply for the year is available, the moshich tari tvei, there the price remains pretty much stable for the entire rest of the season. So Reb Zeira was wondering, in other words, of these three different kinds of sha'arim, these three different kinds of price points, is it that only that last one, achli va'arvi, only the one that remains stable for months at a time, you would be able to be poisek on that, but not the drumos hazeh, which is sort of an intermediate thing where the price is maybe stable for a week or two, but no more than that? Or is it that Reb Yechon is saying it's only also only with the one that's really unstable when the little farmers are selling? Yeah. So now at the beginning, as a now Rav Asi is telling him that no, Rav Yechonon would allow it in the second case, and certainly it's allowed in the third case. It's only the first case, only when the little local farmers are selling, where there the prices fluctuate from day to day, then you can't be posting on it unless the guy actually has the harvest ready at the time. Okay. So again, like the Mishnah had said, you can't make a deal as far as payris like that until there's a prevailing price. Yotza Ashar, once there's a prevailing price, poiskin, then you can make such an arrangement. Because like we said, even though Shimon, the farmer that you're buying it from, may not have the grain available, but somebody else will have that grain available at that price. And therefore, in principle, Shimon could have bought that grain right now and delivered it to Reuven. So therefore, there's no ago netter involved. So the Braisa continues. Hoyu chadoshes me'arba. The Yeshonis Mishalish, suppose that new grain, which is still fresh, is cheaper and it sells at 4 saw to the seller. And Yeshonis, old grain, which is better because it's drier, you're gonna get more flour out of it. You think of it, fresh grain has a high water content, but the water content doesn't help you when you want to grind into flour. So you're gonna get per unit volume, per weight, per bushel or whatever, you're going to get less flour out of new grain than out of old grain. So therefore, the old grain, let's say, is selling at a higher price, 3 saw to the seller. So ein poiskin, you can't make a deal as far as that. So you can't make a deal that. So ein poiskin, you can't make a deal on the new ones that you're going to buy. That you're going to prepay. That you're going to pre-buy them at the price that you're going to give them to me after they dry out. And you're going to give me the four sa because then you have there's a smaller amount now. They weigh less. So therefore, and the fact is, you couldn't buy four saw of dry grain right now because dry grain is not available yet. So therefore, ad sheyetzah shayah l'chodesh al-yoshan. So it will work only once you have a prevailing price for new and for grain. When you're prepaying for new grain at the rate of four saw to the seller, you're going to get them only later on when they're worth three to the seller. So therefore, you can't arrange now. I'm paying you now, and you're going to give me four for the seller later on. When there's a fixed price for at least the second kind of fixed price, like we said before, for both new and for old, then you can start going into such arrangements. What about the other way around? What about another case? What if you have the grain that's being collected by the poor people who are going and collecting leket? Now, it's not such good quality grain, Rashi points out, because grain that comes from one field is all going to be the same quality. But when you have the lekutis, people are collecting leket, they're collecting a little from each field, and then they're mixing it all together. So therefore, you have it's a mixture of quality. So if that kind of grain was going me'arbat, four saw to the seller, or l'chol adam mishalosh, and the regular farmers are selling three saw to the seller, same thing. Ein poiskin ad sheyetzah shayah l'loikeh to l'moicher. Again, in order to be poisek, you would have to have that there's a known price that works for both loiket and for moicher, that each one of them has a stable price, and therefore it would work. Rashi actually has a slightly different girsa in the Gemara over here, that ein poiskin achadoshes me'arba. We said what you can't arrange is that I'm going to buy the new grain at four saw to the seller, which is right now its price, because later on when you get delivery later in the season, it's going to necessarily be worth more. It's going to be worth three to the seller. It's going to be worth three saw to the seller. And after all, the weight of the grain is going to be different between now and then.
You get less.
So therefore it's going to be less, and therefore you have a problem of agar netter involved.
You're getting less flour.
So you're getting more flour. No, you're getting the same amount of flour, because ultimately three saw of old grain will produce as much flour as four saw of new grain. But
the new one
right now is selling at a cheaper price, and you're going to be getting delivery of it only when it's later on. And right now there's no yeshloi and there's no yotzah shar until when yotzah shar, then you're fine. When there's a fixed price for new and for old, then you're fine. And the same thing with lakutis and the regular people. But Amar Rav Nachman poiskin lakutis kishar lakutis. But Rav Nachman says you could make an arrangement with the lakutis themselves at the price of the lakutis. So you can tell a poor person who's collecting leket, you can tell them, I'm going to prepay you and you're going to give me the grain later in the season according to the price of the lakutis, according to the price of what the lakutis are currently selling grain. So that's allowed. In other words, Rav Nachman is saying, within a particular type of grain, within a particular quality of grain, you're allowed to make such a deal. You can't make a false one for the other. You can't say, for example, that I'm going to pay you now for the price of a different quality of grain, which is going to be later in the season, like we said, with new and old. But you could go to one of the lakutas themselves, one of the poor people themselves, and say, I'm going to buy from you. I'm going to prepay you for your grain that you're going to collect later in the season. Because there is lakutas available. Right now, some poor people have already collected. And again, the poor person that you're making the deal with, the principal, could go over to one of those other poor people and buy his leket from him and deliver it to you. So therefore, there's no agar netter.
Leket is going to be very little.
It's very little individually, but over time, it adds up. You have there's actually a Mishnah in Peah that describes that the average field might be expected to produce several percent of leket, because it's very easy to drop individual stalks of grain. Yeah. You have a Mishnah in Peah that mentions a case, for example, where a person what do you call it, where a person makes a stack of grain in his field without allowing the poor people to collect the lek at first, and then we penalize him. But then you have a case, for example, where the wind blew, he had stacks, he had piles of grain, and then it blew them on top of the leket. So we figure out how much leket such a field should produce, and then we give that amount to the poor people, and then the Yerushalmi explains over there that's a certain percentage that we calculate, a certain number of kavim per kur. So yeah, there's a certain expectation that over time leket will add up to a substantial amount. Yeah, let's say. Okay. Anyway, Amalei Rav le Rav Nachman, but Rav asked Rav Nachman, why is that allowed? Maishna loiket, why is it, you're telling me you're allowed to make that arrangement with the poor person himself who's collecting leket. Now, it's not yet a price that the Balabatim are charging, because the Balabatim are going to charge, the farmers are going to charge a higher price because they're selling better quality grain. And you're saying, De'i lesla yozit miloket chavre. So what are you telling me? If the one poor person that you're making the arrangement with doesn't have it, he can go and borrow that grain from somebody else, from another poor person who already collected. And you're saying it's an example of afa pi she'ein laze yesh laze, that we said in the Mishnah is fine. Well, you could argue the same thing. Balabayis nami, couldn't the farmer himself do the same thing? Yosef milokur, he could also, he doesn't have the grain available to deliver right now, but he could go and get some from one of the lakortas. He could go and buy off one of the lakortas and then deliver the grain to you. So why can't you do that? Amalei, Nachman says, the difference is balabayis zilabe milsa lamezef milokur. The balabas, the farmer, wouldn't consider it bekavadik to go to the locket and says, you know what, I don't have grain yet to deliver on a contract that I made. I want you to sell me your grain that you collected as leket from my field. He'd be embarrassed to do that. So therefore, he wouldn't do that. Iboisema, or another possibility, mandi yoiv zuzil balabayas, because when you are buying from the balabayas, from the farmer, a peyre shapira yoiv, you dafka want good quality grain. You don't want the mixture of different qualities of grain that you're going to buy from a poor person, from a locker. Therefore, it's different qualities, and therefore that would be an issue. Fine. So we'll continue. We'll continue tomorrow. That's a shame. Ishkayach.